Barefoot Bill and Mike L. from New Jersey. Let's give them a little welcome here. And you guys have to guess which one's Barefoot Bill. So this is Barefoot Bill and Mike L. from New Jersey.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. We just thought we would start with maybe 5 minutes of what brings us to tonight. My story is kind of interesting in that I guess I started drinking almost on a daily basis by age 17, 18, something like that. And I came into AA when I was 30 or 31. And oh, also, by the way, I have a little bit of a cold. I have a sore throat. I didn't sleep last night. My back is sore. So I have a little bit of a hallucination going. So this should be rather interesting.
Thanks for sharing.
I was in AA for 3.5 years, and I didn't drink. I went to a lot of meetings. I went to the diners afterwards. I went to dances. I went to conferences. I went to conventions. I talked to people pretty regularly, and on the inside, my life was slowly getting more miserable because although I wasn't drinking and hadn't drank in over 3 years, I wasn't changing, and I wasn't doing any kind of inner work. I was just not drinking and going to meetings and not really doing much of anything else. I really didn't think that the steps applied to me. This whole spirituality thing was way too spooky, and I came from a religious family, and it just doesn't work. It just, up until that point, just doesn't work for me. And I had reached a state in AA 3.5 years where if this is the way it's going to be, I might as well just drink, or I might as well just kill myself. Because if this is what life is going to be like from now on, at least when I was drinking, I had moments of relief or moments of blackout or moments of just not inside my head 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, with my head chewing me up and spitting me out and my emotions in my gut ripping me apart because, you know, I was still stealing, I was still lying, I was still cheating, I was still scamming, I was still manipulating, I was still doing whatever I wanted to do with no concern for anybody else. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy because, again, when I drank, at least I had moments of relief or moments of blackout or moments of, you know, alcohol did something for me. It at those times when I was drinking, it took away that inner unmanageability and that inner discomfort. But now I'm not drinking anymore. The only thing that ever helped me with that, I am now not doing anymore. And I hadn't had a drink in 3.5 years, which is relatively successful in AA. And it was at that point that I realized that there was a little bit more going on here than not drinking in dealing with alcoholism. Up until that point, I really thought that alcohol was my problem, so not drinking was my solution. And what I now believe is that alcohol is not my problem. Alcoholism is my problem. And there's a whole lot more to leading a contented, useful, peaceful, I'm happy about the fact that I'm not drinking kind of a life than just not drinking, which I had never seen before. And the interesting thing was is that that was the point that I decided to consider another way besides my own, because up until that point, before I came to AA, I could blame alcohol for the things that were happening. But now I couldn't. The only thing that I could blame was my best thinking and the way I was living my life. And obviously there was something very wrong with that, and that was when I started getting into the steps, and that was when I started getting into practicing a spiritual way of life that then transformed every area of my life for the better, and that it continues to do that as long as I continue to practice it in all my affairs. You know, it's interesting because step 10 talks about continue, step 11 talks about seeking and improving, step 12 talks about practicing and in all of our affairs. So I don't really see any room for complacency in our program, which was the way I was working it. I wasn't even getting into the steps, but you know, I really just wasn't doing much of anything. I certainly wasn't growing on the inside. So today I don't see alcohol as my problem. As a matter of fact, alcohol was my solution for a period of time. Alcohol helped me deal with that inner state of craziness and discomfort. And now I couldn't drink, so that state was still there, and I didn't really deal with the mental and the emotional and the psychological and the spiritual aspects of alcoholism that the steps get into in a really great way. I was supposed to start with a joke, and I kind of told my story first, so now let me finish with a joke, and then Mike can tell his 5 minutes of why he's here. So my story inevitably is alcoholism, untreated alcoholism for 3.5 years, not drinking, but still very much untreated inner condition, and then now in recovery and now growing now pretty much a transformed life, pretty much a person that very much is not capable of doing a lot of the things that I used to do, and certainly not wanting to head in that direction anymore either. So this is the joke. There was a married couple driving down the street, and a policeman pulled him over because the husband who was driving wasn't wearing a seatbelt. So after the policeman came up behind him, and as he was pulling over, the husband real quickly took the seatbelt and put it on. So when the policeman came up to the window, he had his seatbelt on. So he rolled his window down, and he said, "Officer, you know, why did you pull me over? I certainly wasn't speeding." And the policeman said, "Well, when you passed me a mile back, you didn't have your seatbelt on, and that's why I pulled you over." And the husband said, "You know, I'm sorry, sir, but you can see I had my seatbelt on. I had it on before, too." So the policeman looks over at the wife and says, "Excuse me, ma'am, was your husband wearing a seatbelt before when he drove past me?" And the wife says, "Listen, sir, you know, if he said he was wearing a seatbelt, he was wearing a seatbelt." And the policeman looked at her and said, "Why did you just say that? You know he wasn't wearing a seatbelt." And the woman looked at him and said, "Officer, I learned years ago not to argue with him when he's been drinking."
Boy, this must be a sick group of alcoholics to laugh at that joke, I'll tell you. Hi, everyone. My name is Mike Lawrence, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Carry This Message group in West Orange, New Jersey, and my sobriety date is September 27th, 1993, and for that I'm very grateful. Bill said that during the next 5 minutes I was going to tell you a little bit about what brings me here tonight, and the reason I'm here is because Bill and the committee of the Anonymous Foundation asked me to be. Sometimes when I look back on the past 9 years, it's just really a big blur, you know. So doing stuff like this is very beneficial to me, and it reminds me not only the terror, fear, and bewilderment that alcoholism brought me to, but it's also a wake-up call in regards to my recovery and how far I've actually come. So I personally enjoy doing stuff like this, and my personal MO is if we can't have fun doing little workshops or meetings or what have you or weekends like this, there's no sense of having them, because when I was drinking, I was all about the fun, and then drinking wasn't so fun anymore, and then I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I met up with a group of people that seemed like that they were living pretty satisfying lives, and that they were having a good time and they were having some fun, and that's how I try to live my life today. So let's, whether you're here just for this evening or if you're coming back tomorrow, let's try to make this thing as fun as possible and not be so heavy or take our, as Rule 62 says, to take ourselves too darn seriously, because you know, I tend to fall into that trap from time to time. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous just totally beaten down by alcohol. And what I had learned years later, I was also beaten down by what our book refers to as the spiritual malady. I had found out rather quickly that I had a disease of the body and the mind. And it took me a few more years after I came into Alcoholics Anonymous to really understand and grasp that the main center of my The main cause of my problem is what page 64 of our big book refers to as the spiritual malady. And it says, once the spiritual malady is overcome, then we can straighten out mentally and physically. And I didn't know that for the first few years of my recovery. Bill said it took him about 3.5 years before he had any clue of what the steps were. And I guess God likes me a little bit better than Barefoot Bill over here, because somewhere about 4.5, 5, 6 months sober, I got whacked right in the face with the proposition that if you don't start working some sort of program of recovery, you're going to go back to drinking or you're going to kill yourself. And I tell you, the second proposition looked pretty darn good. You know, because I got taken to a place in sobriety where all I was doing was not drinking and going to meetings, and I wouldn't have known a step if it would have bit me on the face. And I just got taken to a place where I said, if this is the way life is going to be without alcohol, if this is the way it is, if when I leave a meeting,
You know, because I would walk into a meeting and you guys would say, Mike, how you doing? And I'm doing great. I'm doing fine. I knew the AA parrot deal. You know, fine, good, you know, coffee's great, meetings are good, see you next week. Don't ask me how I'm doing with the steps, but everything's fine. And then I would go home and punch a wall in the hole, and if I could lift the refrigerator, I'd throw that out the window and pick a fight with the old man and do all kinds of neat stuff like that, you know, that we can do with untreated alcoholism, that us alcoholics can do by just not drinking today, you know. I wondered that why... I wonder that why, when I was just not drinking and going to meetings, that... I mean, I was 21 years old when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think I had more wrinkles on my face. I won't say I grew any more hair, but I think I had more wrinkles on my face when I came into the rooms, and probably during the first couple of years of sobriety than I do today. And, you know, I know exactly what that was all about. That was all about untreated alcoholism. That was all about a spiritual sickness. That was all about being blocked off spiritually, being selfish and self-centered to the core, not having much of a conception of God, by no means having conscious contact with God, and thinking that the deal was just not about drinking. And somewhere around 4.5, 5 months sober, I got taken to a place where I got desperate enough to ask somebody to help me with this program of recovery and to help me with the steps. And Bill and I were talking about earlier, and the way I look at the steps today, for me, my own personal experience, is that so far I've had about 3 surrenders in Alcoholics Anonymous in regards to the 12 steps. This is just the way I see it today. If you ask me a year from now or 5 years from now, I may tell you something different. My experiences are constantly changing, and I think that has something to do with the frequency in which I've been taught to go through the 12 steps. See, we've been taught to work and rework the 12 steps on an ongoing basis, not just one time through 1 through 9, and try to live the best you can in 10, 11, and 12. Although if that works for you, that's great. That's not been the path that I brought down and that I've been brought down in AA. That's all I have for now. I'll bring it back to you. I had a point somewhere around there. I don't know what it was. By the way, for anyone who's wondering, this is Scooby-Doo. And for anyone who's wondering why Scooby is here, I think Scooby is very symbolic of the newcomer. Because I don't know about you guys, but when in the early days of recovery, when my sponsor would say something to me, I would have the tendency to tilt my head and look up at him and say, huh? So that's Scooby.
And you thought my joke was bad. When I got real serious about making the 12 steps a way of life, not just a way of not drinking, it was pointed out to me that the solution that AA has to offer for alcoholism has 3 parts. Not only is our problem physical, mental, and spiritual, but our solution is physical, mental, and spiritual, and that it's encompassed in what used to be all over our literature, which is now gone, which was the circle and triangle. That the base of the triangle, which was recovery, which is the program, which is the 12 steps, the left side of the triangle was unity, which is the fellowship, which is the going to meetings and interacting with other AAs, and the right side of the triangle was service, which is the giving back unselfishly and lovingly, not only in AA, but in all of our affairs, you know, at home, with the average stranger that we pass walking down the street, at work, perhaps other places that we frequent. And although the solution is very much physical, which is, you know, physically we take the body to meetings, mentally the steps kind of deal with the psychological, mental, and kind of awakens us spiritually. And then the way we grow spiritually is through work and self-sacrifice for others. That although the solution is physical, mental, and spiritual, what I've now come to see is that our solution is not physical, mental, and spiritual, that our solution is just spiritual. That physically we take our bodies to the meetings. That sense, that buzz that we feel when we walk into a meeting, perhaps for the first time or even for years after coming into a meeting, that unconditional love, that uncritical acceptance, that sense of wanting to be of service and to help to other people, that very much is a spiritual practice, and that very much is a spiritual environment that we walk into when we have meetings. The steps awaken us spiritually. They're very much a spiritual set of actions that, for me, one of the coolest things about the steps is that whether we agree with it or not, whether we think it's going to work or not, if we do it, it's going to. The 12th step guarantees that. It says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. It doesn't say some people sometimes do. It doesn't say you might. It says you will have a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. So for me, the goal of the steps is not recovery. The goal of the steps is to have a spiritual awakening, and a byproduct of the spiritual awakening is that we recover from alcoholism, as well as a host of everything that we could ever have problems with. I don't see this as an alcohol problem. I see it as a spiritual problem. I don't see it as a spending problem. I see it as a spiritual problem. I don't see it as a relationship problem. I don't see it as a work problem. I don't see it as a food problem, whatever. I don't see it as that. I see it as a spiritual problem. And AA doesn't deal with our alcoholism. It deals with our spiritual condition, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, and that spiritual condition deals with our alcoholism. Like Mike said, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So that's sort of what the premise of the next 2 days are going to be. This is very much a spiritual solution. It's kind of one of the reasons why people kind of put down AA and say, you guys don't deal with alcoholism. What are you talking about? You know, what are you talking about? You're talking about God. You're talking about making amends. You're talking about inventorying. You're talking about getting honest. You're talking about acceptance. You're talking about dealing with other people in life in a completely different way than a self-centered way that we used to live our lives. And they don't understand, what does that have anything to do with alcoholism, quote-unquote? Well, our solution really doesn't apply to alcoholism. It applies to our spiritual condition. Just like all the 12 steps fellowships that exist in the world, they all deal with the spiritual condition. And when the spiritual condition is dealt with, it deals with our addiction. Whether it's drama, whether it's gossip, whether it's food, whether it's drugs, whether it's alcohol, whatever it is. So the steps very much are a spiritual set of actions and a spiritual set of principles. And then being of service to other people is very much, you know, faith with works, that we need to be of service to other people. There's a quote in the Big Book that for me sort of captures the essence of that aspect of it. And it says on page 14 in Bill's story, it says, "For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead." That I don't help a new person because they're sick. I help a new person because I'm sick and I need to be helping people. My being of service to another person is part of my meds to stay away from my next drink and so that I feel good on the inside and that I'm out of my brain for a couple hours and I'm not thinking about me anymore. You know, a big part of my problem is thinking about me and a big part of the solution is thinking about somebody else. So I don't help somebody because they're sick. I help somebody because I'm sick and I need to be helping people. And for me, that's the kind of message that I carry to people that I work with because I think it's very important. Also, in the early days, you might have noticed that Roland Hazard was the gentleman that carried a message to Ebbie Thatcher. Ebbie Thatcher didn't ask for help. Roland Hazard showed up in court and started helping him. Ebbie Thatcher carried the message to Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson didn't ask for help. He was sitting at home in his kitchen, trashed out of his mind. Ebbie showed up and started working with him. Dr. Bob didn't ask for help. Bill Wilson showed up and started helping him. AA number 3, Bill D. He didn't ask for help. Bill and Bob showed up at the hospital and started helping him. We don't help people because they need the help. We help people because we need to be helping people, and that's part of how we move away from our next drink, and that's part of how we feel better on the inside, where we can have a useful, contented life, and drinking just isn't an option anymore. A couple other quotes from the Big Book that point toward this just being about spirituality. As a matter of fact, this is from the Came to Believe book. I guess at one time I think it had a black cover, a red cover, and a white cover. I'm not sure where it's at now, but I've seen a bunch of different covers on it. This is from page 6. It said, "During a meeting one day, I remarked that I was just tickled to death with this AA program, all but the spiritual side of it. After the meeting, another member came up to me and said, 'I'd like that remark you made about how you like the program, all but the spiritual part of it. We've got a little time. Why don't we talk about the other side of it?' That ended the conversation." Now, in the Roman numerals, it says this. It says, "We work out our solution on the spiritual as well as altruistic plane. Altruism is the giving of ourselves and expecting nothing in return. Altruism is very much a spiritual practice." So it's basically saying that we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as spiritual plane. Then it says, that quote I read before, that if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, that he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Page 25, it says, if you are as seriously alcoholic as we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. So he's kind of saying that if you're an alcoholic, there's only two paths that you can go, either a lot of booze or a lot of God. And he says it a second time, too. I don't see it right now. I'll cover it because I know it's further in my notes, but I don't see it right away. In the Jim story on page 35 in More About Alcoholism, it says, we told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk a half dozen times in rapid succession. That statement for me, he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. I would like to suggest that every person in AA that has ever relapsed, that it was because of that reason. If you ask them if they were doing morning meditation, if you ask them if they were doing inventory, if you had asked them if they had made amends, some part of that process they were not doing. And that's how we grow spiritually, is by going through the steps and then carrying the message to other people. When we fail to enlarge our spiritual life, we fail to reach the point where we're comfortable with ourselves not drinking and we can just live a decent life here and now, comfortable in the moment, not worried about tomorrow, not thinking about today, just in the moment, here and now, totally comfortable, totally at peace, totally all right, right now. You know, I don't know about anybody else here, but I drank because I couldn't get comfortable in my own skin. When I drank, that was the only time that I could feel comfortable in my own skin. And then after I stopped for 3.5 years, I still couldn't achieve that. And it was only when I started working the steps and seeking a spiritual path that I finally reached the point where I was comfortable within myself, no matter where I was, no matter what I was doing, no matter who I was with. I was all right here and now. And for me, that's kind of the goal of everything. If I can just have peace right now, I'm in heaven. And when I'm not in peace, and when I'm in fear, and when I'm in self-concern, and when I'm in that inner turmoil, I am in heaven in no uncertain terms. I mean, I am in hell. In no uncertain terms. On page 43, it says, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Page 44, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And here's that other one that I was talking about. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Again, there's no door number three. Door number one is either a lot of booze or a lot of God. And don't get me wrong. I'm not really that comfortable with that. I'm not really that comfortable with that as a solution. I would much rather not do much of anything and just not drink. But my experience has been that not doing much of anything and not drinking brought me a whole lot more misery and as much misery as when I was drinking. Because, again, now I'm inside my head. Now I'm ripping apart emotionally and mentally, and that state was just not comfortable for me. Page 45, it says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how are we to find that power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. They're talking about the big book. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. In How It Works, it says, remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one, capital O, which has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And in the original manuscript, which was what the big book looked like before the last changes were made in it, that actually said, you must find him now. Which, don't get me wrong, I'm kind of happy that they changed that a little bit, but for me, it kind of captures the essence of where they were coming from. It wasn't as subtle as it ended up the way it is. Then at the A, B's, and C's, at the end of How It Works, it says that probably no human power could have relieved their alcoholism and that God could and would if he were sought. Mike mentioned it before, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Page 77, it says, but with the alcoholic whose hope, and in the original manuscript that said whose only hope, is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. Page 99, it says, remind the prospect, which is a new person in AA, that his recovery is not dependent upon people, it is dependent upon his relationship with God. Then on page 100, it says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we had planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. For me, that's one of my favorite promises in the book, because there's an incredible sense of freedom when we can live a life where what life is handing us doesn't matter. If I keep the job, I can be all right, and if I lose the job, I can be all right. If my son acts in a way that is reasonable, I can be all right, and if he acts in a way that's not reasonable, I can be all right. If the wife stays, I can be all right, and if the wife goes, I can be all right. And don't get me wrong, you know, I just experienced last year a marriage breakup and an incredible amount of pain and an incredible amount of bewilderment and an incredible amount of pain, just an incredible amount of pain. But through all of it, I still had a sense of I'm nothing more than just sitting in God's hand, and I know that I'm going to be okay, and I know that I can get through it. I don't know about you, but even when everything was all right, I never had a sense that everything was going to be all right. I always had a sense of impending calamity. Even when everything was okay, I always had a sense of I know that I'm going to self-sabotage whatever I get myself into, and that the other foot's just going to fall. And that today, even in the middle of extreme life situations, I can be all right within myself, and that's an incredible sense of peace, and that's an incredible sense of freedom that I hope that I could pass along to somebody else. Page 120, it says, this is actually talking about if we have a relapse. It says, though it is infinitely better that we have no relapse at all, as has been true with many of our men, it is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Your husband will see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. You need not remind him of his spiritual deficiency. He will know it. And then on page 164, which is the last page before it gets into the stories, it says, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. So there's certain things we need to do. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him, capital H, is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. So those are just some of the quotes out of the big book and some other literature that talks about sort of the premise of where we're trying to come from in regard to the next 2 days, is that, yes, there's physical aspects and mental aspects of our program, but when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, and we're going to share some things that we've come upon that have helped us in trying to seek that kind of a path.
Bill read the quote in How It Works. There is but one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I have kind of a rhetorical question for the group. And maybe this is a question you want to sit with and not necessarily let your ego answer it right away. But the question is it possible for anyone in this room to pick up a drink right now? How about right now? How about now? Now? You see, when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, all people were telling me was stay in the moment, take one day at a time. If necessary, 1 hour at a time. Stay in the now, stay in the now, stay in the moment, stay in the now. And I didn't get it. I didn't start to get it until a couple years ago, when some other spiritual literature started coming in my life, and these spiritual teachers and just people who've been doing this a heck of a lot longer than I have, literally non-alcoholic people who live their life not just one day at a time, but one moment at a time, for each and every moment. I can't get drunk right now. In retrospect, it makes a world of sense today. You know, just don't drink today. You can drink tomorrow, but don't pick up that first drink today. And I didn't get it. And I got it now. Because tomorrow never comes, because it's always today. I don't think there's any coincidence that one of the quotes that Bill read about, may you find God now, And I just woke up to this recently. I really don't think it's a coincidence that it says, may you find God now. It certainly doesn't say, may you find God in the past. May you find God yesterday. I mean, Bill Wilson could have wrote, may you find God on Wednesday. Right? No, they're telling us, may you find God now. Because that's the only time there is. Now. This present moment is the only moment. Anything in the past doesn't count because it's in the past. Anything in the future is not reality because it hasn't occurred yet. It's not now. I like to look at the process of the 12 steps. What I bring to the process of the 12 steps is a clogged drain. Anyone have clogged drains or clogged pipes at home? You know? I like to... I know what's going through your head.
It's called nasal decongestion.
I wasn't going there. But I'm the clogged pipe. I'm the clogged drain. And what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are for me is liquid spiritual Drano. It's spiritual Drano. It cleans out the clog. What the clog is that I am blocked off from conscious contact. I am blocked from that which is keeping me sober this moment. Before I go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I rest on my laurels and I don't continue to do steps 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis, and for me, if I don't do annual or semi-annual inventories, and if I don't continue along with the process of making amends, and if I don't continue to become entirely ready to have God remove all my defects of character, I really hate that word all. I hate it more today than I did 9 years ago. If I don't continue to do these things, if I don't continue to keep my drain clean, I'm going to clog up again. And I'm going to be blocked off from that which is keeping me sober today. I'm going to be blocked off from that which keeps me sane. From that which always did, always has, and will continue to point me to truth. The second step says that we get to be restored to sanity. The tenth step tells us that by the time we've gotten here, we are restored to sanity. Check out these promises. I mean, for years and years, all I heard about was the ninth step promises. And don't get me wrong, they're great promises, and they've come true in my life. But let's check out these tenth step promises that the big book talks about. Wherever they are. It says that love and tolerance of others is our code. You kidding me? Love and tolerance of others is our code? Resentment, hatred, and aggression towards others was my code. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, dash, even alcohol. What a concept. I have ceased fighting anyone or anything, even alcohol? I mean, I got the part about cease fighting alcohol. You know, I mean, that happened somewhere probably at about a year where I woke up to the fact that, by golly, I haven't thought about drinking in quite a while. So something's going on here. This AA thing is really working. You know, and I started working the steps, and every once in a while I would have that subtle thought of a drink, and it would go as quick as it came. And I didn't attach to the thought. And as soon as the thought came, I used to say I began to pray. And I heard a gentleman say something similar to this, and I can relate it to my experiences. When a thought of a drink comes to mind to me today, I don't begin to pray. Something happens from within me, and a prayer begins to come from within me. And there's a subtle difference there. And drinking is no longer an option. So I got to deal with alcohol pretty quickly. But cease fighting anyone or anything? They can't mean the wife. They can't mean traffic. They can't mean the boss, my employer. Cease fighting? You got to be kidding me. 10 Steps Promises says that that's a place we can be brought to. Cease fighting my home group members in business meetings? I know you guys in Albany don't have that problem, but, you know, I guess we're a little sicker in Joysy. We will be seldom interested in liquor? My God, what a promise. I've only got to do 10 steps to be taken to that place. Only, like it's easy, right? If tempted, we recoil as from a hot flame. You know? I'm not insane enough today where I if I know a burner on the stove has been lit and it's hot, and I think I'd like to touch that burner just to see if anything has changed in the past 5 years. No. I notice that it's hot and boop, I recoil. It's a hot flame, baby. That's how it is in regards to alcohol. We react sanely and normally. My sponsor says that hasn't quite happened for me yet, but, you know. And we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. I like to add this part, with a hell of a lot of work in the steps. But it's true. I didn't start this step process. I mean, when I was new, yes, I want to have a spiritual experience so I can recoil from alcohol like a hot flame and sanity will happen automatically. Man, I just wanted to get the monkey off the back. I just wanted the voices to stop chanting in my head. Dr. Paul, who wrote a story in our big book, talked about, on a lot of his tapes, talked about the committee in our head. You know the voices. They start like about 4:30 a.m. You're a piece of garbage. You're going to have the worst day of your life at work. That woman laying next to you who's snoring, she don't really love you. Those AA people, what a bunch of quacks. They're not really sober. You know, thoughts like that, like Bill talked about, our head starts to chew on us. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. You know, I get to ask myself today, is that my current experience? Do I feel like I'm in the safe in regards to alcohol? Or, how about this one, in regards to any of my character defects or self-will? Do I feel like I'm in a position of neutrality? Safe and protected, where I'm not fighting my own self-will today, where I'm not fighting other people in my life today? That'll make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, huh? We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are not neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we... Now, that's a condition. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. I'll turn it back to Bill.
Mike had talked about staying in the now. It's kind of interesting the way step 10 throws out the fact that on page 84 it kind of talks about steps 4 through 9. On a moment-by-moment basis. And on a moment-by-moment basis, in the now, in the moment, right now, if I'm sensing selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear, or if I'm sensing that I've gotten off the beam or I've gotten away from being in the moment, there's a way that we can get back on the beam. What's interesting with the wording that he uses is... First it says in the beginning of step 10, it says, we vigorously, which means, you know, pretty effortfully, commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So it's saying that we start the way of life of step 10 and 11 as we start going out to make amends in our ninth step. So there's no sort of pause or there's no sense of, okay, now I finished all my nice to amends, now I can start doing 10. It's saying that as I start cleaning up the past, I start practicing this step 10 and 11 way of life. And notice the wording that it uses. It says that we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness of having entered the world of the spirit, which is another way of saying of just being in the moment. Because you might notice that the big book, Fourth Step, talks about resentments, fears, and sex and harms and stuff like that. And that a resentment is a form of living in the past. You know, it's amazing how we can have a resentment toward people that are dead. You know what I mean? I mean, think about that for a second. These people aren't even alive anymore, and from the grave, they're controlling our lives. Resentment is a form of living in the past. A fear is a form of living in the future. And the more we're in the past or we're in the future, the better chances that we are or causing harms right now. So the reason why the first 9 steps deal with the past is because after, you know, that 75% of our program deals with the past, and after we've dealt with the past, we can just be in the moment here and now. We're not influenced by what people did or what people said or all of that. We're just able to respond currently, right now, in whatever way is appropriate, in whatever way seems perhaps loving to us. Whether the person deserves it or not, that's another form of freedom for me in trying to practice this way of life, is that, you know, in the past, I would only treat you well if I thought you deserved it, or if you treated me well, or whatever. It doesn't matter to me today. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean that I'm supposed to allow somebody to abuse me. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if a person acts inappropriately, that does not give me the right to act inappropriately. And the reason why I do that is not for them, it's for me. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, they pissed me off, so I'm going to punish them by me having negative emotions. That's sort of like, you know, I'm going to take poison and expect you to get sick. You know, which is basically what a resentment is. It's I'm going to take poison, and this sense of just negative emotion that just eats us up in a response to somebody else that, you know, we think didn't act the way we wanted them to. So it's like, you know, I'm going to take poison so that, you know, you get sick, which really just doesn't make sense. So, you know, in the beginning of the first 9 steps, it very much deals with the past and it very much clears up all that stuff so we can just kind of be in the moment, so that we can just be in the moment, not influenced by the past or the future anymore. And notice the wording that he uses. It says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Right now, I look for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. As soon as I find something that's disturbed my peace of mind or that's taken me off the beam or that's shifted me from just being right within myself, I look for that. And that when these crop up, I ask God to remove them. Right now, ask God to help me with this. It says that we discuss them immediately or now with someone else. We make amends quickly or right now if we have harmed someone. And then we resolutely turn. Right now, we resolutely turn towards someone else that we can help. Because all of a sudden, now the focus is on us again because somebody didn't act the way we wanted them to. Or perhaps, you know, like Mike said, you know, traffic's bothering us or the boss isn't acting the way we think they should You know, that's another thing that in hearing a lot of fifth steps, the one statement that probably covers 95% of every single resentment that I've ever heard was the following statement. So basically what you're saying is they're not acting the way you want them to. That covers it right there. Every resentment I've ever had, just about 99.9% of every resentment I ever had, if not 100%, is because they're not acting the way I think they should. And what better form of playing God is there than them not acting the way I want them to? Like, I know it's best. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of stuff we can be free of as we go through these steps. So it's very much talking about in this moment, seeing if I've gotten off the beam, and in this moment, getting back on. Then on the page 85, it says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will and thy mind be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish, it is the proper use of the will. Again, in the moment, carrying the vision of God's will in all of our activities. Now, as I go through the day. If I've gotten away from that, I can get right back to it. And then in step 11, he kind of does the same thing. With, you know, he talks about as I go through my day, I pause when agitated or doubtful. Agitated is well before pissed off, and doubtful is well before we're in deep crap. You know what I mean? If in the moment I find myself agitated or doubtful, agitated is an emotional disturbance, and doubtful is a mental disturbance, that as soon as I find myself off the beam, I have a process that can get me back on the beam, in the now. The more peace and the more freedom I have in more nows, the better I feel about my life. Drinking isn't an option. I don't need to go back to drinking because drinking helps me with that, and I can bring it about within myself with my higher power's help and with the process of the steps and with the techniques that we're talking about. And I can grow more and more where, you know what, most of my day today is very peaceful and it's very comfortable. And I just came here to stop drinking. You know what I mean? And it talks about, notice when it describes our inner state. 10 and 11 very much talks about in the now, analyzing where are we currently. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean that, you know, I can't work because I need to view what's going on inside of me. It talks about we consider our plans for the day. That's very much an inner thing. It says before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. It talks about being divorced from self-seeking, or rather self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Motives are an inner thing. It talks about our mental faculties. It talks about God giving us brains to use. It talks about our thinking being cleared of wrong motives. It says that we may face indecision and we can't determine which course to take. All that stuff is very much on the inside. We can ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. The answers will come after we've tried this for a while. It talks about the hunch or the occasional inspiration, but gradually becomes a working part of the mind. It talks about conscious contact with God in the now, not just a conception of God, but a conscious contact with God, a relationship with that power within us. You know, it's sort of like I'll get into it in the second session tonight, but it's sort of like there's two parts within us. The ego aspect, which is very fearful, selfish, dishonest, me, anxious, that's that part of that voice and the characters that that voice sometimes takes on. And Mike mentioned it before with, you know, just how we judge the world as not being okay. And then there's that loving aspect of us. That's loving, honest, not fearful, very unselfish, very honest in, you know, practicing the principles and being honest with, you know, what's really going on in the moment right now. So there's these two parts within us, and I'm going to do an exercise later that, for me, is one of the most powerful things I've ever heard. And it's just like a 10-second exercise that we can do in observing an aspect of our, you know, being in the moment that, for me, was very mind-blowing and very uplifting because I read this quote one time. It said that we all have a Grand Central Station mind, but we don't have to get on every train that comes through the station. I have these thoughts that are just crazy sometimes. I mean, just moments ago I had one. And it's like, but I don't have to get on that train, you know? Like, I remember one time my marriage had just ended. I was going through a lot of pain and a lot of crazy thoughts. And I called to my friend and I said, I only have two thoughts. Do I burn the house down when they're home or when they're not home? And this is a person that tries to practice spiritual principles. I mean, this is, and, you know, we both laughed and we both realized neither one of those things I was going to respond to. But, you know, I can have these thoughts, but I don't have to feed into them because I can see that these are just not healthy. It's that ego or that unhealthy voice is driving that aspect of me. And there's another part of me that can override that. That's the very honest, very loving. You know, with my marriage ending and me going through a lot of pain, after I realized that it was over, I never said or did anything that I regretted or that I needed to make amends for. I don't know about any of you, but I'm not capable of that. My last name is Lash, and I'm really good at lashing out. And to have the freedom where my mind and my emotions are telling me to do something and me not to do it is one of the greatest experiences I've ever had. I know within me what is right. You know, some people call it your conscience, your Holy Spirit, your Buddha nature, your inner voice, for me that's that part within us that is of God. And there's ways of distinguishing that voice compared to the other one that, you know, is just out there to get everybody. You know, it's the judge, it's the fearful aspect of it, it's the you're not good enough, you know, that's that ego voice. And inevitably the more I follow that voice, the more stuff that I have the inventory in the fourth step. The 11th step continues, our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. It's very much talking about what is going on within us. And it's very much talking about distinguishing between those two voices that are within us and trying to do the next right thing now, in the moment. Totally free of the past, totally free of the future anticipation of it. Just in the moment, just totally right, just totally free, just totally comfortable. And it's strange because, you know, what does this have anything to do with not drinking? It has everything to do with not drinking. Because if I'm comfortable within myself in most moments, drinking just isn't an option anymore, and it's the whole goal of the steps. It's just to be comfortable here and now. Where I can bring about that ease and comfort that comes when I take a drink by not taking a drink, just being in the moment after the process of the steps, trying to grow spiritually and to be of service to somebody else.
5 more minutes and we'll take a break.
The title of this from the flyer that I saw is called The Spiritual Life is Not a Theory, We Have to Live It. And then there was a little blurb about maintaining conscious contact through the holidays. And I got pretty excited and fearful all in about 10 seconds when Bill had asked if I'd be interested in doing this. Because, first of all, the thought ran through my head, what a neat topic. And the second thing that ran through my head was, man, I really don't do anything differently to maintain my conscious contact during the holidays than I do any other time during the year. So I'm really going to have very little to talk about, which we know is a lie once you get to know me a little bit. but I want to just close this session with a few quotes from the chapter Working with Others in our big book, because I really think it speaks to the topic that we've been sort of charged with. On the bottom of page 100, it says, assuming we're spiritually fit, and I think with a lot of us, mainly me, that's a big assumption, but assuming we're spiritually fit, we, meaning alcoholics, can do all sorts of things that people say alcoholics are not supposed to do. Then on the next page, it says, we meet these conditions every day, and they go, before that, they describe, you know, we're not supposed to go where there's liquor being served. God forbid if I see a billboard that advertises Heineken, Zima, what is that? They didn't have that when I was drinking, you know. But, don't watch a movie that has to do with drinking or drugs, you know. Mike, you can't watch the Doors movie. My God, I love Jim Morrison. But these are conditions that we must meet every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something wrong with his spiritual status. If I have an alcoholic mind, there's not something wrong with my mental status. There's something wrong with my spiritual status. It goes on to say, so our rule is not to avoid a place where there is drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. You will note that we have made an important qualification. Therefore, ask yourself on each occasion, have I any good social, business, or personal reason for going to this place? And these are tools that we can use during the holidays if you feel you're on shaky grounds. Or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such places? You know, am I going to this party or this business function or this family gathering to go there for me? To get what's out of it for me, you know, my national anthem, me, you know, and the 12 steps of AA tell me to focus on you, you know. So I need to be focusing on you. What can I bring to these events? If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. We get to have a choice now. Either go or stay away, which either seems best. But be sure you're on solid spiritual ground before you start and that your motive, this book talks a lot about motives, in going is thoroughly good. Do not think of what you can get out of the occasion, me. Think of what you can bring to it, you. But if you're a shaky, you had better work with another alcoholic instead. They're always telling us to work with others. Get out of myself and get into others. Your job now is to be at a place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. I won't comment. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. The very last paragraph of page 103, which ends the chapter Working with Others, it says, After all, our problems were of our own making, and this hooks back to the 10-step promises. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. We'll take a break. 10 minutes?